AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Let's recap the start of a new year, do some forecasting of what might happen in the year ahead, and try to figure out how this morning's economic data might influence the Federal Reserve's monetary policy. Yeah, it's a busy day, from interest rates to Prop 12 to another snow day for the federal government.
Live from an unwelcome revival of the Shackleton Expedition via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday Bereaver Haul. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Chris Gibbs, and yours truly standing by. Later, we'll chat briefly with Jared Bernstein, Chief Economist and Economic Policy Advisor for the President. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Every now and then, I got to say it. That can't all be happening in this one show.
That's this show. This show, yes. Holy and we've already smokes. Started, so there's no time to, like, you know.
To reevaluate and say, yeah, maybe we're shooting a little high, something like that.
Let's leave a little breathing room in here. No, there's no breathing room. We're past breathing room. We are at choke point where we're at now, you know?
Yep. So Proposition 12, USMCA, and the dispute panel ruling that we got earlier. The meeting at the White House. We got to talk about that. John Deere making headlines at the tech show in Vegas. The non-farm payrolls for December, that data was out this morning. The risk of another COVID-driven shutdown, maybe not here, but in other key areas of the world. Supply chain issues. Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan. We've got a lot to cover today, dude. A lot.
Yeah, there's a fair amount to talk about in today's Friday Free for Her. I'm excited about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Okay, we need to get to the news because we got Jennifer Scheich's going to be coming in here real quick. So let's go ahead and get to it. What you got?
Well, Chip, December payrolls rose only 199,000 while the unemployment rate fell to 3.9% according to Bureau of Labor Statistics data. The report covered the week including December 12, which came before the worst of an Omicron spike that began heading into Christmas. The Fed has turned more hawkish as the labor market struggles, fueling concerns it will move too far in the opposite direction after ignoring inflation through 2021. There's a lot in there, lots to unpack. But first of all, that December payroll number, 199,000, a big miss. Big miss.
Trade was thinking 425. The whisper number was 500,000. Because based on the ADP jobs data that was out earlier this week, we'll talk to Jared about it at the end of the show, Jared Bernstein. But I'm sure that it will come up in the conversation with Jim too, because we've got to talk about interest rates and the fact that the cash interest rate market, the real interest rates, are already getting out in front of the Fed moves.
Well, U.S. mortgage rates this week rose to their highest level since May 2020 at a time when home sales prices are already near record highs. The average rate for a 30-year fixed-rate loan was 3.22%, up from 3.11% last week and 2.65% 1 year ago. This, according to Freddie Mac, mortgage rates in recent days have followed the steep climb in U.S. Treasury yields. Chip.
Yep. Yeah, there's no doubt that real interest rates are anticipating a much more aggressive stand by the Fed. And, you know, one thing that we didn't mention from that payroll report that was out, the average hourly earnings up 0.6% in December. It's that kind of inflationary kindling that probably has the Fed looking to move more quickly on interest rates.
Well, U.S. consumer demand for goods and easing supply chain constraints drove a surge in imports in November, pushing the trade deficit close to a record. American manufacturers sent fewer goods overseas in November compared with the prior month, but spending by tourists boosted services exports as U.S. borders loosened COVID-19 restrictions for international travelers. USDA currently forecasts fiscal 2022 ag exports at $175.5 billion with imports at $165.5 billion, which would leave a surplus of $10.5 billion. U.S. ag exports would need to average just over $13.9 billion per month and imports just over $13.4 billion per month to reach USDA's forecast.
Yeah, ag is a rarity when it comes to the trade balance. We typically do carry a positive trade balance or trade surplus in agriculture.
Global analytics firm IHS Markit says the U.S. is positioned to ship more liquefied natural gas overseas during 2022 than major competitors Australia and Qatar, which led the world in 2021. Now, soaring demand in Asia, home to number one LNG importer China, and to Europe, fueled high 2021 U.S. export volumes.
Yeah, well, we've got to have some incentive to produce it as well, and I don't know. We keep fighting that battle.
Field hearings about a new farm bill are likely early this year, but most don't expect much beyond that, as Republicans believe they have high odds of taking over control of the House and fair odds of regaining control of the Senate. Midterm elections are going to be a big one, Chip.
Yeah, you bet. We can talk to Wiesmeyer about that on today's show as well. Get a little bit of a prediction from him on that.
Instability in Kazakhstan, the world's biggest uranium producer, threatens to curb output and boost prices at the same time supplies of the nuclear fuel are becoming tighter. And more than 60 million people are under a winter weather alert across the United States today. Chip, over to you.
Yeah. Oh, man, I hope that they don't get on the roads in Virginia on I-95 again and have that thing closed down. I mean, those poor people were out there for more than 24 hours in many cases. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. How you doing, Jennifer?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good, good. So let's take a look forward. What's the status of ASF preparedness? What's the industry learning?
Well, one of the things that I think we have a really unique opportunity right now to do is to be doing real-time research while ASF is in Vietnam. So we're getting these on-the-ground research reports coming back in and kind of helping us understand, like, some of the things we thought maybe were a good plan if ASF were to hit the U.S. may not be the best way to carry out eradication efforts. And so some of the research that we've got going on over there are really showing us how to prepare for the worst case scenario if ASF were to hit the U.S.
Okay. When we talk about this, Jennifer, it just kind of gives me the chills to even talk about it, getting into the commercial herd here in the U.S. But so far, the biosecurity efforts and efforts at the border to keep pork product out, it seems to be working.
You know, I think it is. You know, right now we've seen some good returns on that. And I think that one of the things that we've learned is, you know, we weren't prepared when PED hit the U.S. back in 2013. Right. And that's why I think our industry has learned so much from that experience. And we're doing everything we can to just be thinking ahead about what are the different ways that we can prevent it, whether that's talking about tests for being able to, you know, diagnose it and confirm finding it, or whether that's looking at how it can spread.
Right, right. Okay, good stuff, Jennifer. Thank you so much. Learn more about that at porkbusiness.com. Thank you, Jennifer. We'll talk to you next week. Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Okay, when we come back, we've got Wiesmeyer, we've got Michelson, and we've got Chris Gibbs ready to go on this week's free-for-all right here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's January 18th online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. We are going to get the free-for-all started right now. Davis Michelson is with us, of course.
Yes.
Put on that landowner editor hat. Okay, Davis?
All right, 10-4.
All right. I know you.
And done.
Do you remember where it's at? I mean, there's
I got it. It's right
so
here.
Many
no,
there
it's on,
in the closet.
I leave it on the desk, so it's always close at hand.
Excellent, excellent. All right, Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer is with us. Jim, welcome.
It's always good to be here. It always amazes me how this town breaks down with a few inches of snow.
Oh, yeah, you got another snow day going in the district, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, crazy. And Chris Gibbs, Ohio farmer and chair of Rural Voices USA. Chris, thanks for making time for us this morning, buddy. Appreciate it.
No problem. I'm here, and by golly, nothing shuts down on the farm with a couple inches of snow. We're still doing it.
Yeah, are you moving corn this morning? Is that what I heard?
I am moving corn this morning. Matter of fact, I took a picture of it and sent it to you guys. But gee whiz, don't send that out anywhere because it looks a little more than 80,000 pounds. So.
your secret's safe with us, Chris. Don't worry about it.
Thanks.
Don't
worry about it.
Hey, you're in that area that's expected to get the winter storm too, aren't you?
I didn't hear that. I thought we missed that unless there's something coming up. We missed a big storm actually yesterday. We're supposed to have a storm, but all we got was cold weather. We were 9 degrees this morning, and that's fine. It's sunny and 9 degrees. It's still nice to work outside.
You bet. Heck, we're 5 below here outside the broadcast bunker, Chris, and I got the smoker fired up, and you know it's just another January day.
That's exactly right. Hey, I didn't expect any love from you. I'm just telling you.
That's right. I get it. Okay, guys, let's get this started. Jim, I want to start with something that we started the week with because we had Michael Formica from the National Pork Producers Council on Signal to Noise at the start of the week talking about Proposition 12 in California. And it's not... It's California's Proposition 12, but it's the entire industry's issue, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we're going to maybe hear the initial indication from the Supreme Court today, but as Michael told us, it'll more likely come next week, Chip. But this is a fundamental test on whether or not one state, in this case, California, can dictate interstate maneuverings in a big industry such as pork.
Right. Now, what the Supreme Court is going to tell us is whether or not they are just going to hear the case. That's what they're looking at today, right?
Yes, to accept the petition. So, you know, we have a ways to go on this one.
Right. I mean, I understand the argument that the consumer is always right. The customer is always right. But in this case, the voters in California, most didn't even know what they were voting for when they voted for this, Chris. It feels like a fight that we need to fight.
Yeah, I would agree. Let's start back on the politics of it a little bit. You know, we have to understand why our forefathers did not set us up as a democracy, because democracy is chaos. And that's exactly what you find that happens in California, because when everybody gets to vote on every little thing, including the weather, you end up with chaos instead of a republic where you send people to the legislature to do your bidding for you. So that's what we end up with. You know, I'm torn on this a little bit. I understand that we've got a big issue because we're moving commerce back and forth across state lines. From a producer standpoint, I've always looked at the consumer and said, you know what? If you want me to breed a purple cow with 3 ears and 17 tits, I'll do it for you, and here's what it's going to cost. Okay, you know that's what I'm in business to do is to do that. Right. That's the left hand. So this is the torn part. On the right hand. Come on, guys. We're doing a good job out here. Many states, if not all states, have put in reforms to to growth and processing and breeding and so forth. Ohio's done the same thing. We're doing the right thing out here in agriculture, and we're providing a safe product, a abundant supply at a reasonable cost, you know, bar the inflation issue of COVID, but at a reasonable cost, it's always out there. So, hey, let's have some reason, common sense.
And, and Chip, for perspective, the California regulations were due on September 1, 2019. You heard that right. 2019, and they're still not out. How can you comply with something that they don't have the final regs on? And that's why less than 1% of U.S. pork meets those standards. And the compliance would raise production cost a little over 9% or $13 a pig. So be it if you know the regulations and your prices are going to go up. But, you know, there's a lot of question marks on this one.
Yeah, Davis.
And it goes back to a discussion that we've been having, I don't know, as long as you and I have known each other, Chip, and that is the disconnect between the urbanite and the farmer themselves, and sort of the misconception of how a hog is raised, how pork is produced, how, you know, what's the point of cows, you know, that whole thing. And that's a battle we got to keep fighting, too, and this is a symptom of that.
Right, right. It's the conversation needs to continue on that path, and what is the right way to raise those animals? Where I thought you were going to go, Davis, on the conversation that we've been having, I was thinking about the conversation that we've been having this week about the value of social benefits, perceived social benefits.
Oh,
California producers want to feel better about the product that they're eating. And
they
if they want to feel better about it, then like Chris said, pay for it.
That's exactly right. That's a free market. That is a free market. Yes.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Interesting. Interesting. No doubt. No doubt. Let's go to the meat meeting that happened at the White House. You know, you guys, and Chris, I'm going to go to you first on this one because it was a conversation at the White House about an effort to bring down beef prices. And farmers, including ranchers, were agreeing with what was being said. Instead of bringing down the price of beef, shouldn't we be talking about moving more of that consumer dollar down the supply chain and get it to the feed yard and get it to your pasture with the cow and the calves?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's right. But let's remember what the White House did. They were up front. They weren't hiding the fact that they were trying to repackage this that they had. Actually, there was really no new information here, not much new information. Right. They were trying to repackage this, and it says it right in the release. It says the president continues to aggressively work to tackle the causes of higher prices for American families. He's trying to tackle inflation here, and they said as much. And he's trying to jawbone this a little bit. Surely, this has been an argument forever that those dollars need to flow down to me, to the producer, etc., because we're not getting them at this point. We got them in 13, maybe 14 because of a drought in 12, but that was the last time we saw them. So I understand what the president's doing here. They're jawboning a little bit. At least at least the president is saying what me as a producer has been saying, and I appreciate that.
Okay. That's interesting. But, Jim, some of the feedback that I've gotten, not so much from producers but from consumers, is that the president blaming packers for high beef prices is like blaming the convenience store for high gas prices.
Yes. As the Chamber of Commerce official said, it isn't economics, it's politics. And government intervention will actually further constrain the supply and push prices even higher.
Yeah, boy,
I'm not sure.
Why not?
Here's the free for all part. We can't equate the blaming a 7-Eleven gas prices. That's a retail operation. The wholesale operation, okay, is where this is getting bottlenecked up on in the beef process, not the retail, where gas prices have to, just like Kroger's or grocery store is just like a 7-Eleven. They're at the mercy of their supplier. Okay. Yeah. And that supplier in the meat business is the packer. So that's not quite equatable in my view.
Okay. Hey, I'm willing to accept that. And the bottleneck is at the Packer level, and it's a pinch point.
Let's be clear. Yeah, we were. Listen, they didn't have good COVID protocols. They lost people because of COVID. They're standing beside each other. A lot of migrant labor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
There was a lot of problems right there, and it showed up where there was no meat on the shelves for consumers. And then here we go. And we have not recovered that. We have not eaten, if you will, to coin a phrase, eaten our way out of that yet.
Right, right.
We've been through this before when the government steps in and tried to expand anything, because there was a Kansas State University economist, Chip, that said, quote, meatpacking's a cyclical business.
Yes. All right. We'll be back with the free-for-all.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, I take a look at this soy complex, and that soybean meal market is making a big move today. What's going on?
Well, the focus this week on weather in South America has been Brazil and just the absolute slashing of the crop estimates there. But looking ahead, the forecast for next week is ripping hot in Argentina, and they're going to be dry for the next 10 days, maybe 2 weeks. And so that's gotten into the meal market today, gotten into soybeans, and really reverse prices sharply to the upside.
Yeah, it's a big move. We've got, call it $9 to $12 higher in the soybean meal market, which has got our bean market 13, 14 cents higher this morning now. And it's helping to pull front month corn prices to the upside.
Right. So, we had the sharp pressure on wheat continuing overnight and that pulling corn down. But with that move up in soybeans and soy meal, like you mentioned, corn's now just a little bit above unchanged. Wheat, it remains under pressure, especially the spring wheat market, double-digit losses there. But winter wheat contracts have really pared their declines and now even starting to see the March SRW contract poke above unchanged.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. Just real quickly, we had an export sale announcement of corn to Mexico for delivery in the current marketing year. Soybeans, a sale of 120,000 tons to unknown destinations for the new crop marketing year, 22-23. Real quickly on livestock.
Well, cattle market, it's under pressure this morning. With the strength in corn, feeders have turned to the downside, moderate losses there. And then the hog market front end, the February contract is sharply lower because of the big premium to the cash index.
Gotcha. Thank you, Brian. That's ProFarmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and the free-for-all. We've got Jim Wiesmeyer, Davis Michelson, and Chris Gibbs with us. Jim, let's jump over to the USMCA and the dispute panel decision that came out this week. U.S. dairy is claiming victory, and in some ways the Canadian dairy industry is claiming victory too. What gives?
Well, it was pretty much noise. I would have loved to have had Haney on this morning, and he probably would have admitted they grasp at straws on claiming victory. It was just for their very restrictive supply management program. But this was indeed a victory for the U.S. Dairy sector, who had complained. But I think the key here is really a signal that how USMCA is actually working far faster than the laborious World Trade Organization. We're getting decisions announced, dispute resolution settled in months, and actually we're having negotiations between the two disputing countries taking place very quickly, Chip.
Yeah. Chris, that's an important point. With your experience at USDA, with your experience of watching these issues and trade issues, because Jim, wasn't this dispute first entered like in May of 21, not 20, but 21?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was. I mean, there's been a complaint on this one, but it moved, you know, fairly quickly, for sure.
Yeah, it moved quickly, Chris. That's a good sign.
Yeah, it is. It is a good sign. And Jim took the fire from me, and so I'm going to just bolster what he said. What I'm glad to see is that when we have a dispute, we can run it through the USMCA process, which is a new process for dispute resolution, and we can get a resolution. Don't have to like it. That's fine. Some win some, lose some, but at least we know where we're at. And
right.
So I'm tickled to death as a producer.
Good, good, good. Chris, supply chain issues. We've talked about the prices that you are going to be paying for 2022 inputs. Have you taken physical delivery of what you need? What's your level of concern? We talked with Jim Mintert from Purdue University about the Ag Economy Barometer on Wednesday, and it seems like prices, yes, that's a concern, but it's manageable. What isn't manageable is not getting what you need to get the job done.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll give you what my experience is directly. My supplies are all laid in. I've paid for everything. I've got the nitrogen in the barn, in tanks, the 28s in tanks. All that's done. My supplier says that I'll get my my pesticides, chemicals, and so forth. He will get them. So I trust that. I've stuck with him. I've been with him for years. He says he's going to get them. He's going to get them. And by the way, I've already paid for them. So my guidance to a friend, to listeners, to anybody that would ask me is two things. Number one, don't walk in March and say, here's my list of supplies.
Right.
Here's what I want. That's number one. Number two, don't go shopping. Don't sell out a supplier for a dollar. Don't go hunting just because things are high. You stick with your supplier. Because what both of my suppliers are saying is they're not knocking on any doors. They're not taking new customers. And I asked one of my suppliers about the glyphosate. He says, if you're not buying everything else off of me and you haven't been, I'm not selling glyphosate to you.
Really?
So don't go shopping. Okay. Don't go shopping.
Interesting. Interesting. Davis, this whole fertilizer price.
Stick with the one that brung you.
Yeah, I hear you, Chris.
Dance with who brung you. Yeah, always good advice. A tweet out from Josh Linville, our pal, talking about these urea barges and the massive price volatility. And I think that's the thing is, you know, we started before Christmas around 765, down to 620, 712 yesterday, 685 today. I mean, it's just so hard to know what to do in an environment like this. And Chris is exactly right. I mean, you got to stick with who got you to this point. And it's just going to remain volatile. And I wish that somebody could come in and just say, okay, here's what's going to happen. Nobody knows. Because
right.
we're still horribly undervalued compared to, you know, global benchmarks. So
right.
who knows?
Yeah, to attract more product to the U.S., that price might need to move
I think
to
it
the
does.
Upside. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's exactly right.
Yep. Jim, Davis had the item in the news, field hearings about the new farm bill, likely early this year. But so much of that work is going to be put off until after the election, isn't it?
Oh, it will be. You will have field hearings, and they should take place early this year. But, you know, that's about it, because you've got the House Ag Committee Republicans fairly upbeat and, you know, pretty high odds that they're going to regain control of the committee after 2022 election. So you don't want to go too far on this. Plus, there's a lot of differences between the current, you know, leadership on the committee. So, yes, but we ought to air out some issues. What has worked? What has not worked? And we don't even know the budget baseline for you know, working on a bill. That's why I think we'll probably have to punt and extend it for a year or two.
Okay. Okay, Chris, do you want this next farm bill to be evolutionary or revolutionary?
I think evolutionary. I think evolutionary. There's a lot of things here that'll work. Risk management, crop insurance is working. At least it's working for me. If there's anything that evolves, I'd like to see the conservation title beefed up. Let's put more money into conservation, because the more we put into conservation using the existing tools we have, CRP, CSP, EQIP, all of those things speak to the president's climate change agenda. And USDA, that's the avenue that farmers, the conduit, if you will, that farmers can access and make differences in climate change is through these USDA conservation programs. Let's beef them up.
And not just funding for specific programs, but for technical assistance for the personnel to actually implement those, you know, programs.
Yeah, you got to have people. Got to have people.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the staffing situation, Jim? I mean, the last I heard, we were like 2,000 short at FSA offices.
Yeah, well, they're the unsung heroes usually of the work that they do. So I've always said that over the years. They're not perfect, but boy, they've handled it quite well, and they're getting better and better in the era of COVID. So yes, there's been some improvements. Getting some more directors out there at the state offices, I think, will really help in the overall strategy of certain states and counties.
All right. Couple more items before we get to the final segment here, in which hopefully Gerald Bernstein from White House Council of Economic Advisors will be joining us. But so John Deere's making all kinds of headlines out in Vegas at the tech show, Chris, with the autonomous tractor out there. Is one of those in your future?
Probably my grandson's future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably not for me. I just got up to two models behind in a new combine this year, so I'm feeling pretty good about that. But so an autonomous tractor probably won't be in my future. But I tell you what, that's where we're going. That's where we're going. We're using this technology, more efficiency, et cetera, et cetera. And John Deere knows that, and there's a market out there. And by the way, there's money for it.
Yeah, you know, when I think about something like that, Chris, I think about the guys out west in the rangeland that might have, 4,000 bales to pick up from one field. I can imagine the old driverless baler out there and some sort of a transport unit that is just driving around out there picking up bales and putting them where they're supposed to be so that we can get to them and use them. So that I can see.
Yeah,
and of course, on tillage, I can see it too.
Well, back for me, just as small as I am, 500 acres. My son says, we ought to get us a grain cart. And I said, that's cool. I said, number one, we got to have a tractor to pull it, another tractor. And we got to have a man or a woman in there to do it. There's got to be somebody to do it. Well, the autonomous thing does help that.
Right. Exactly. Okay, jobs data. I want to get your take on it before Jared gets in here. Jim, 199,000 non-farm payrolls added in December. The trade expected 425, as much as 500. Feels like another big miss, man.
It was a big miss again. And, that covered the week, including December the 12th, which came before the worst of the Omicron spike. So, what does that mean for the next report? The Federal Reserve is in a box, much to their making, because they were so wrong so often, including the White House, on inflation, calling it transitory. But I don't know whether this is going to impact the first increase in the interest rates. But if this economy can handle 1 to 3 25 basis point increases, then, it's it's even worse than some people think. But I think the economy will, withhold, will blunt some of these, coming increases in rates.
Right. Rates under 1% don't scare me, but interest rate exposure 2-3 times what it has been in the past several years worries me. Right, Chris?
Yeah, it does. I want to go back a minute. Doggone it. I want to do Paul Harvey here, rest of the story. We missed. You only took a quarter of the pie here. I want the rest of the pie. Unemployment rate dropped to 3.9%, better than the 4.1 estimate. Wage increase is more than 4.7 year over year. Leisure and hospitality, biggest gain in the industry. So let's tell the whole story here. If you get under the covers, you get under the hood of this report, you can't just say non-farm payroll
right.
rose by 199. You can't just say that and then walk away. You got to tell
right.
the whole thing, and then you want to get into why is that?
Right.
the child tax credit have anything to do with it? Not sending maybe a mother.
We
back
are going to find
office.
Out about all of that from Jared Bernstein coming up next. Players.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
I got a better idea. Chip?
You do?
Yeah, I do. Get on the Twitter maker. Get on the Twitter maker. Make us a tweet. Hashtag at AgriTalk. Hashtag AgriTalk.
That's
do
right.
that instead.
That's exactly
I'm looking
right
at it right now.
We will be sure to see it if you do that. All right. Jim, we got the free-for-all going. Chris Gibbs is in the background with us now. We're waiting for a phone call from Jared Bernstein at the White House. But Jim, the reflection that took place yesterday of what happened 1 year ago, what was your take on it?
Well, like a lot of Americans, I probably didn't listen that much. It was a horrible day in our history, but some of the things I heard was over the top. So yeah. I just hope both sides lessen the rhetoric.
No, as you said, it is something that should not have happened. And we said this so strongly a year ago that Tim Burrock was on with us on the free for all on, which would have been exactly 1 year ago today. And we talked about the, how it was inappropriate. It was it just shouldn't have happened. The riot at the Capitol. But to compare it to December 7th, 1941 and to September 11th, 2001, which is what Vice President Harris did, that just seems so out of bounds to me, Jim.
It was out of touch. It was just too far. But again, both political parties are ratcheting every issue up. And it's just the American public are turning Washington off. Period.
Well, right. that's the danger in that hyperbolous comparison with a 9/11 or a Pearl Harbor is that, well, okay, if that's the case, then the people who did this are now terrorists. Rather than American citizens who might be upset and have an issue that they don't feel like is being listened to or is being ignored, now we're just going to dismiss them because they're terrorists and freaks. I think there's a danger there.
Oh, yeah. All voices should be heard, and mm-hmm. but it needs to be done. When we had moderated chat rooms on ProFarmer.com when it started, the line that we used, Jim, remember that comments are going to be edited for clarity and civility.
Yeah.
The conversation when it happens, it has to be a civil conversation. Agree, Davis? I absolutely agree.
Yes.
You can get mad. You can show that you are upset over issues, and you can do that with respect and civility. I'm not too sure that we had much of that when the riot was happening.
I don't think so either, but I think that's the level that we're at. Where was the civility in Portland over the summer? Where was where was any of the civility from any side? You know, let's forget the sides. Let's just think about people in general. Civility.
Yeah.
It's hard to find. It's hard to find. Except in interpersonal one-to-one relationships, and that's where it gets real, and that's where civility remains. We've got to keep that in mind.
Absolutely, Jim. It just concerns me what this means for the next 10 months as we make our way to the November elections. I mean, the the commentary, the rhetoric is going to be hard to take on many different levels.
Yeah, well, it's raw politics, raw issues. I mean, you can see it in almost every issue emanating out of this town, both in the Trump administration and now in the Biden administration. Vaccines, you name the issue, there's volatility and mean-spirited comments.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something that we're going to have to work to manage as members of the media, as we are. We're going to have to make sure that we cover both sides. We're going to have to make sure that we put the proper perspective on issues and continue to move forward. Okay, and speaking of moving forward, let's move forward. It doesn't look like Mr. Bernstein is going to have time to make the phone call for us today, which is unfortunate. I enjoyed having that conversation with him, but Chris made a good point. We do have to talk about the whole story behind the employment numbers and that wage growth thing, Jim. We're approaching 5% annual, 0.6% in December. That's got to be forcing the Fed's hand, right?
It should. And now,
is it going to be a January increase?
No. Because he's very cautious. And see, that's the dilemma he's in. He doesn't want to make another policy mistake here. But again, I think the economy can handle a 25 basis point increase in March. It may be deferred until May now. So we'll see.
Yep. And I tell you, one of the things that we need to keep in mind, and Davis, we talked about it earlier this week with Phil Flynn, I believe, was in on this conversation. If we don't see an interest rate increase now, and we don't see 3 points or three increases in the year ahead, get us into that 0.75 to 1% range, then we don't have any bullets in the magazine. We don't have anything that we can use in case there's an economic slowdown to incentivize growth.
And go back to Rich Paulson's comments. There needs to be some kind of cushion. There needs to be some kind of cushion.
Right. And right now, the cushion is an quote-unquote extra $2 trillion in savings. Okay? Now, the problem with that $2 trillion, like we talked about with Bill Lapp yesterday, is that it is not evenly distributed out there.
Right.
And so those that need the cushion the most may have the least cushion. So it's going to be an issue as we get into the year ahead. Big thank you to Chris Gibbs for joining us. And we had to clear a line waiting for Jared Bernstein to call in here in the final segment. That didn't happen. We'll talk to him later. Jim, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Davis, we'll talk to you this afternoon.
Later, buddy.
We're going to get into the weather with Kevin Marcus, Marcus Weather Consulting, this afternoon, 206 Central on AgriTalk.